Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A woman drives her car into a U.S. bank building. The FAA orders emergency checks on older planes. And a British judge sets a pedophile free because, well, the kid seduced him.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, steel yourselves, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, April 5th, 2011. A woman drove her car into the U.S. Bank building at Southeast 160th and Division this morning. Candace Saylor, 53, had arrived about 5:15 a.m. to park and use the ATM, and the brakes failed on her car, or as actually she said when I saw this on the news this morning, She thought she was hitting the brakes, and she hit the gas.
Yeah, that's not so much the brakes failing.
That's not the brakes failing.
It's not the car's fault, honey.
Saylor suffered a gash to her forehead and was taken by ambulance to Legacy Emanuel.
Gash.
A tow truck dragged the late 80s Buick out of the building about 6:15 a.m. It had heavy front-end damage.
Okay.
Yeah.
How old was
she's 53.
Miss What's-Her-Name? Really? Because that's normally a thing you find in your octogenarian set. You know, right up there with the accelerator stuck.
I forgot how the pedals worked. No, she's 53. No.
All right.
Contractors hired to clean up a barge stuck in the Columbia River hope to have it dismantled in 6 weeks. Contractors are building what's called a coffer dam to dismantle the barge and prevent oil from leaking in the Columbia River. In late January, residents along the river noticed oil floating down the river from the barge named Davy Crockett. Brent Vandenheuvel, executive director of the Columbia Riverkeeper, said the Davy Crockett barge is a complete disaster. The ship should be taken out of the water and cleaned up in a dry dock. Instead, contractors are using huge 180-foot steel beams to stick in the mud. The beams will surround the barge and try to keep the oil contained while crews cut it apart.
How are beams keeping the oil contained?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Program manager Troy Nylander said they want to further minimize damage to the river. It's got contaminants in it, he said. We got it contained right now, but that's what the sheet pile is for, to preserve the river and get out what we can get out.
Have we all somehow just over the last month or so forgotten how to not dump toxic pollutants into the river in massive quantities?
Yeah,
or into the ocean, depending on where you live?
Yeah, the 431-foot converted ship from World War II has already leaked lubricating oil, fuel oil, and some diesel into the river. Its owner, Brett Simpson, has a history of environmental violations has not been located.
It is believed to be lambing it as we speak. That's great. All right. Never a dull moment in this world of ours, Dawn.
Oh, yeah, and this whole cleanup thing is going to cost us $9 million.
By us, you mean us.
Us.
Okay.
By us, I mean, you know, you and me, taxpaying Portland residents.
Great. Whatever happened to the new Carissa? Did they ever get rid of that thing? Or is it still just sitting on the beach somewhere being scavenged by meth heads?
I think they blew it up. and in the thoughts that maybe the tiny particles would fall harmlessly to the ground.
That should be our solution to everything here in the Northwest. We should just something we can't get rid of something. You know, the new Carissa or a whale or homeless kids downtown, just blow them up.
Just put some dynamite in them and just blow them up.
Blow them all to hell. you were listening to, that's the Rick Emerson solution to everything. Just blow it all to hell. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, April 5th, 2011. Thank you for coming by. Later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also Science on the March. And the next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program today featuring Mr. Aaron Duran at the Week in Geek. That is coming up next hour. Also, on the board here to my right, it just says Nazi Cannibal Clown. And I'm assuming that that is three separate watches or one watch, after which we will just get rid of the feature altogether because it won't be able to be toppable.
Or it's the name of my Juggalo cover band.
Yes.
Is that the Nazi Cannibal Clown?
We have a Nazi watch? Really? A Nazi watch?
We do. We have a Nazi watch.
We don't really get that very often.
I love the Nazi watches.
That's kind of the good news, bad news, that we don't have the Nazi watch happening very frequently.
Yeah, that's true.
In any event, you're listening to...
What are you doing over there with tissues?
Cleaning my... None of your
tissues.
Business. You should look away. It's perfectly natural. I was brushing my teeth right before the show, and then I had some toothpaste on my fingertips. Uh-huh. And of course, the thing with this Mac is it's the unibody, the aluminum, whatever. So the trackpad is just this one aluminum square, which is great unless you get anything that is remotely like sticky or grimy on your fingers. And then it's like, and then every time you go to move your mouse around, your fingers just go across the trackpad, and it's just unbelievably irritating. So because I'm an Apple nerd and therefore easily marketed to, they sold me a small valise of travel cleaners.
Are those special Apple brand travel
Maybe.
Cleaners?
Maybe. Next to godliness, Don. All right. So never mind.
Mac wipes.
Yes.
The FAA ordered emergency checks on hundreds of aging Boeing 737s on Tuesday. The federal agency took action after realizing the plane's fuselage is capable of opening like a sardine can in mid-flight.
Does it actually say that?
It does.
Okay.
I thank the fine people at Slate for putting it that way.
Wonderful.
This action is designed to detect cracking in a specific part of the aircraft that cannot be spotted with visual inspection, said the head of the Federal Aviation Administration. The inspections come on the heels of an incident last Friday during which a 5-foot hole opened up in a Southwest airplane plane when it was at 36,000 feet. Most of the jets requiring checks belong to Southwest and endure many short-haul flights, which place particular strain on the bonding of the fuselage. The inspections are of the electromagnetic type to make sure that they don't have potentially dangerous cracks. Former NTSB director Peter Goles said there was no way mechanics would have known about the cracks, which caused the hole to open up, like a can of sardines, on the Southwest Airlines flight last week.
In this case, it just came from what's known as a D-check 11 months before. That's where they strip this plane down and go over it. No one knew to look in this area of the fuselage.
It's sort of a learn by doing.
Right.
Sort of a...
And now we know.
And now we know this can happen.
Goles said the Southwest Airlines incident that prompted the new inspections could lead to changes in the way airline mechanics do their jobs.
People are going to take a hard look at how airplanes age, and they're not going to just focus on the troubling areas that they've seen in the past.
Ball bearings.
They're not. They're going to look other places now.
Blah-da-ba-ba-ba, gremlin, blah-da-ba-ba-ba, wing of the plane, da-da-ba-ba, stewardess. Shatner.
Right.
Lithgow.
Vancouver fire crews say an early morning house fire could have been much worse if not for the quick actions of a passing driver. The fire started about 1:30 at the home in the 4,000 block of Northeast 88th Street. Fire investigators said a passing driver saw the fire burning on the front porch of the home and stopped to alert the people inside.
How does a fire start on the front porch of a house?
Well, there's your flaming dog poo.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could be some kind of an electrical thing. It could be
on the front porch, really?
Angry squirrels.
Seems well. I mean, I'm willing to see the angry squirrel point. It seems like there's not a whole lot. I mean, unless you're, except for the actual porch light, which when's the last time a porch light caught on fire? Like never. So it just seems like one of those things that that is somebody flicking a cigarette, perhaps out an upstairs window. I'm not saying that's the case, but almost always this is just the result of somebody putting something that's burning down on something that burns.
The fire did spread to the interior home, but was quickly extinguished by firefighters. Investigators estimated the fire did about $10,000 worth of damage. Firefighters said the two women who live in the home were forced to stay with friends because of the damage.
It was on Northeast 88th?
Yeah.
And it did $10,000 in damage, which the house destroyed.
I used to live in Northeast Portland. I had this house. And once in the summer, it was really, really hot. So I was sleeping in the spare bedroom, which is in the front of the house. And the windows were sort of level with the bed. And I was about like 2 o'clock in the morning. The people who lived across the street at what I suspected was a house where perhaps drug dealing happened, since there were many people who came and went at all hours of the day and night.
A few minutes.
And the guy drove up in his, 20-year-old Cadillac at, 1:30 in the morning. And I heard the car, and I opened one eye, and I saw the car pull into the driveway. And then I saw the guy walk into his house, and I was okay. So I went back to sleep. And when I woke up about, 45 minutes later, I saw lights flashing. And realized it was like the lights of emergency vehicles. And I rolled over and looked, and the guy's car was just engulfed in flames.
Wow, that's awesome.
So I think he had it was one of those left the cigarette burning on the floor of the car or something.
So it's like you just sort of looked, and then you looked away, and then you looked back later, and
yeah, it was pretty impressive.
That's fantastic. Did it explode?
It didn't explode, but it did, it was parked close enough to the house that it just melted the siding off the side of the house.
That's fantastic.
They moved out not long afterwards. I think perhaps the landlord may have had an issue with them.
That was not the sort of tenant he was interested in having in his abode.
No.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us next hour at the Rick Emerson Radio Program and RickEmersonShow.com. Don't forget, if you want to get this program, you can do it later on the day via iTunes. Also, as a direct MP3 download here or at...
Where?
Legion... Here.
Oh, you said so I was waiting to hear where else.
I was stretching.
Oh.
Here or... at legionofnews.com. Also available on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. And so forth. Here's Don Taylor.
The Oregon House has voted to give authorities the power to prohibit people from feeding bears, wolves, and cougars. The House's 51-9 vote on Monday.
I want to know who the nine are. Find me the nine people that are all for going out and feeding a bear.
I know. I think people should be allowed to feed bears.
I will guarantee you that at least two of those people are libertarians.
The bill would allow police to issue a warning requiring people to stop feeding bears, wolves, and cougars, but it doesn't specify a penalty if they don't comply.
Well, first of all, if the warning isn't the 7-inch fangs on the thing that you are feeding and the fact that it's looking at you as though you are made out of mincemeat pie, perhaps, a piece of paper urging you to contact your local constable is not going to be sufficient to scare you off from that.
Democratic Representative Gene Cowan of Newport said the measure is needed to prevent wildlife from becoming comfortable with humans and dependent on them for food. She says the bill is a response to an incident in Lincoln County where a woman refused to stop feeding bears and the bears damaged her neighbor's property while looking for food when she went on vacation.
Yeah, I think bears are pretty comfortable with humans. I think that ship is sort of sailed.
I love the whole story, though, that she just kept feeding the bears. Then she went on vacation and the bears came and like, where's the food? Where's the lady with the food? Well, maybe this guy next door has some food. Let's just rip his porch apart looking for Pringles.
Well, that was a pretty fair assessment on their part there. You got to give it up to them for actually being able to suss out. I bet they found some.
I bet they did.
So, it's like I was just talking to my wife about this last night, that it's the thing about Pavlov notwithstanding, it's still weird when you realize that animals are learning and anticipating your behavior. Does your dog, does Bella know when you're getting ready to take a nap or go to bed or something?
Well, she knows now, yes. And she also knows now when I'm getting ready to go to work, because I started giving her cookies when I leave for work to kind of buy her love.
Look over there.
She always looked so sad when I was leaving. So now when I start packing up my laptop and stuff, now it's like, she's like, hey, great, you're leaving.
Yeah.
is awesome. Where's the cookie?
So that's my thing too. Whenever the last thing I do at night when I go to bed is I take my glasses off and I put them on a table in my office. And so every time when I take my glasses off and I put them on the table, Max immediately runs to his little, bed, on the other side of the house or whatever. He's just getting ready to, snuggle in for the night because he knows that that's bedtime. So it's weird, though, because then that makes you wonder, what other movements or things that I do every day are animals, let's say crows, anticipating and learning from? You know what I mean? And it's just, and what are bears sort of... What are bears learning other than if you go rooting around in a guy's house, you'll eventually find something that that may squeal for a bit, but eventually is tasty.
Well, I just, can you imagine how infuriating that would be to be the neighbor?
Oh, yeah.
And you have to, like, confront the woman when she comes back and go, okay, the bear has destroyed my house because you won't stop feeding the bears.
So that's probably what it is. It's not to prevent idiots from being killed by bears. It's to prevent neighbors of the idiots from having the bear come by. And you're some sort of proxy.
Do you have any food?
Gladys isn't here.
Hey.
Do you have anything? Do you mind if I just come in and I just... boy, I got to take a load off. My dogs are barking. If I can just... do you have a couch? Maybe some ham? A wife? You have one of those? And just, you know. That would be... Because then you just got...
You're not using this cat, are you? Because I could just eat the cat.
Because then it's just like... Because it's just like the Betty White Lake Placid thing. where she's just tossing a roast to the gator every now and again. And that's why it continues to linger. Boy, she was like 1,000 years old in that movie. How old is she now?
Foul-mouthed Betty White in Lake Placid. She's 80-something.
She's
like 84 or something.
I know that it seems pointless at this juncture, but she's got to be shaving years. There's no way she's just 84.
Probably.
It is Hollywood. Yeah. I mean, she seemed... She never really... Even, you know, like in the Mary Tyler Moore days, she didn't seem that young.
But actually, if you look back, though, and you look at it and you realize that she was probably only 40 then. I mean, she really... You think of her as being older because she was like... older than Mary Tyler Moore.
I guess.
But you go back and you look at that now and you go, wow, she really wasn't old at all.
And I guess she's always been older than me.
Right.
Like, I never saw her in anything when she was, like, you know, 15.
Like, I remember my mother, like, had this weird thing for Peter Falk, which I always thought was kind of bizarre.
Odd.
And then not too long ago, I saw a rerun of Columbo. And I thought to myself,
he's like 20.
You know, Peter Falk was actually kind of handsome.
Yeah.
Peter Falk was kind of hot. But, you know, I always thought of him as, like, this creepy, weird older guy with a funny eye.
Yeah, no, it is strange when you see... Well, you know who I just saw the other day? And this sounds bizarre, but I saw him sort of rumpled up in something. It was Steve Carell. And I saw Steve Carell, and I think it actually might have been The Office. It was some episode of The Office where he got caught in a rainstorm, or he was up all night drinking or something. But he came and he was all bedraggled, and he had, like... You know, like the tie was all pulled and loose and, shirt was unbuttoned and he had like the 5 o'clock shadow. And he didn't, most importantly, he didn't have the part in the hair. Mm. He didn't have that like Hitler thing where it's like going off to the, it was just sort of scraggly and like in his face. And you realize he actually does have kind of a shaggy haircut most of the time. It's just that they gel it into place. And I realize he's actually a really good looking guy, which it's not like I ever thought he was hideous. But you do realize it's not just that he's sort of pleasing to look at. He's actually a very handsome guy. And but you don't really realize that when you just view people through a specific prism for the, you know, for a long time.
Exactly.
So.
Like me. I'm actually quite hot. But most people don't realize because all they see, you know, the goofiness.
Okay.
It's true.
There's nothing I can say here that won't sound snarky.
All right. A British pedophile walked free from court after a judge accepted his argument that his 13-year-old victim had led him on.
Is that a pedophile?
A pedophile, as they say in the Britain. David Barnes, 24, engaged in cyber sex with the schoolgirl and downloaded hundreds of pornographic pictures and short films, one of which showed the rape of a handcuffed 5-year-old girl. He admitted 17 charges of making indecent images and one of inciting a child to engage in sexual activity. But after he appeared before Judge Peter Fox for sentencing...
Well, no, wait, hold on. Let's back up for a second. Where's the... leaving aside the issue of the child porn, where's the pedophilia with the girl? Or is it just that he sent her porn or something?
It's just that I guess it is still considered...
inappropriate chat.
Right. They engaged in cyber sex.
I see. Okay.
He appeared before Judge Peter Fox for sentencing and was allowed to walk free with a suspended sentence. The judge handed out a lenient sentence despite saying... The probation officer in your case has written of a high risk of harm which you pose and that risk is of a sexual nature to children. He said, I accept it has been a dreadful shock to your mother, to your father, and to your grandmother, and to those who have known you. And in addition to the images, there was your perverted activities over the internet with the 13-year-old, who, I accept, appears to have seduced you. He even admitted the public would be puzzled, to say the least, by his decision. And yet, he suspended the guy's sentence. The judge triggered similar outrage 3 years ago when he freed a 40-year-old mother who had had sex with a boy of 14 after she said the teenager had seduced her.
Well, that was probably true, though. Let's be honest.
So apparently this guy, the whole they-were-asking-for-it argument works brilliantly with him.
Well, let's have no illusions about this. Sometimes they are asking for it. You don't have to give it to them.
Right.
That's the thing. You know, give it to me. No.
No, you're 13. No.
But do you have a mom, perhaps?
Yes.
Or an older sister, an aunt? Yeah, just because they're asking for it, they don't need to get it all the time.
No, you know, or ever, really,
yeah,
from you.
Yeah, they get college for that, you know,
yeah.
Later. Did he know that she was 30? Well, that's a weird, tricky area, because how would you even know? Online.
Considering that apparently he had, like, tons of child porn.
Oh, I guess maybe he
probably did.
He had a keen sense for who was actually underage. He had a sort of spidey sense for kiddie porn.
Yeah.
That's the worst superpower of all, by the way.
Oh, God.
My spotty sense is tingling.
My pedo sense is tingling.
There's a cream for that.
Workers at Japan's crippled nuclear plant have begun the process of dumping millions of gallons of radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean.
We should know, by the way, this is no longer the Bob Miller Show. You're not,
no.
Just in case you thought you were still listening to us hosting the Bob Miller Show.
We're still anxiously waiting that phone call, though, for them to offer us that afternoon slot.
I'll let you watch the phone. I'm going to go home and take a nap. I'm sorry. We're polluting the water with what?
The Japanese are polluting the water with radioactive stuff.
Okay. Well done.
Former nuclear engineer Michael Friedlander says he understands why they're doing it, but he believes there are better ways of dealing with the problem.
Well, they're Asian.
I've seen some pretty amazing things done in similar circumstances where there's large volumes of water, things such as bringing in temporary 100,000-gallon tanks, storage bladders, building evaporation basins and things like that. It's certainly the most expedient, but I'm not sure that it's exactly the most prudent thing to be doing.
I'm sitting in an empty conference room by myself. There's nobody here. I was hoping a lot of people would show up for this press conference, but I'll just record my voice. Hello.
Is it really better, by the way, to evaporate the radioactive water into the air than to just put it in the ocean? I mean,
well, it's better for Japan, I would imagine.
Is that a six of one sort of a thing?
I guess it depends on if you live right there.
Friedlander says they're doing it to avoid an even more serious problem.
The logic is we're going to dump a lot of very low-level radioactivity to give us space so that we can put the water that is extremely highly radioactive in its place. The logic makes sense. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, this is your whole thing of, like, just dump it into the atmosphere because it dissipates. This is the Dawn method of just, well, you know, it'll all spread out.
That's not my method.
Well, remember there was the whole thing about me saying, like, you know, how the Earth was a closed system, and so therefore just putting it over there, like, it's still around. But this is a bit, I'm not snarking, I'm saying, you and the Japanese, you're apparently lockstep. They've learned a thing or two from Don Taylor. Just dump it into this much bigger thing where it will dissipate over a large area.
You are grossly misinterpreting that conversation that we had.
And oversimplifying.
And oversimplifying and completely just flat out lying about what I said.
Well, that's not true.
This is actually closer to what Joe Squires was talking about with the nuclear sub stuff.
The big ocean theory.
The big ocean theory.
Well, no, that's the same thing. It's all part of the whole, like, well, if you take a small thing and put it into a larger thing, it's less noticeable. So, which is fine. Look, I'll be dead in 50 years anyway. What do I care?
And besides, now there's more chance of getting us a Gamera.
We want our own Gamera, and not just that Cloverfield thing, an actual Gamera.
With the possible theft of millions of consumer email addresses from an advertising company, several large companies have started warning customers to expect fraudulent emails that try to coax account login information from them.
Let me understand this. As of now, today, I should start expecting some fraudulent emails to appear. This is a thing that I should now be on the lookout for.
A dozen companies said over the weekend that hackers have learned their email addresses because of a security breach at Dallas-based company Epsilon that manages email communications.
One of those companies, TiVo, by the way.
Two other companies, according to emails I received, Walgreens and Target. Among the affected companies are banks, such as Capital One Financial Corp., Barclays Bank, U.S. Bank Corp., and Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, and retailers including Best Buy, TiVo, Walgreens, and Kroger. The College Board, a not-for-profit organization that runs the SATs, also warned that a hacker may have obtained student email addresses. Walt Disney Company's travel subsidiary, Disney Destinations, sent emails warning customers on Sunday. Epsilon said Friday that its system had been breached, exposing email addresses and customer names, but no other personal information.
Yeah, that's what TiVo said. They said it was an email address and your first name, but nothing else.
The email addresses could be used to target spam. It's also a standard tactic among online fraudsters, to send emails to random people purporting to be from a large bank and asking them to log in at a site that looks like the bank's site. Instead, the fraudulent site captures the login information and then uses it to access the real account. So, anyway, yes. Speaking of which, Epsilon sends more than 40 billion emails annually, has more than 2,500 clients, and their shares fell $3.82, or almost 5%.
That's a bad day at work.
On Monday.
You don't want to be the guy who left, you know, who just who left that thumb drive sitting in a bathroom somewhere.
Yeah, the first one I got of those was from Walgreens, and it explained the situation with Epsilon.
Hello,
and
drug
the
user.
And then like the next day, I got one from Target as well, because I'm on the Target email list, and I've bought stuff online from Target, so. So keep an eye out for that, because there's nothing you can do about it, but you might as well be worried.
Okay. Yeah. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes, or a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com. Next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Nazi Watch, Cannibal Watch, Clown Watch, and The Weekend Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran. And that is all for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. Today, we want to welcome brand new subscriber. I was going to have this in front of me, and yet, no. Let's see. We want to welcome new subscriber Tony joining us today.
Tony.
That is Tony from Tualatin. So Tony in Tualatin, a brand new subscriber and listener to the an enjoyer of all things us, via rickemersonshow.com, where he is going to be amused in a fashion that he probably has never, his feeble earth mind can't even comprehend the glorious greatness in terms of amusement that he's going to be receiving as of today. So
his
that
head's
going
to swell up and get really big, like David McCallum in The Outer Limits.
Really, we're gonna mirth him to death. So that's Tony. You also can be listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program as of today for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. And don't forget, your first week is free. So find out more at rickemersonshow.com. Today, by the way, I have a terrifying photo to show you. So just FYI.
Oh, good.
Not going to show you right now. I'm going to spring
it's
it on you later.
It's not a clown, is it?
Maybe.
Oh, see?
It is. Oh. It's not. Or is it? It's not. Yeah! Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do science.
Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. You know, they could this business of the house in Northeast or whatever, what was like a fire on the porch?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, it can't be the porch light, because that's, how would I really know, though? Yeah, I don't. I'm just making stuff up. They would probably know whether or not that's a thing that could actually happen or does happen with any frequency. Because you got to figure, electricity can set stuff on fire.
It can.
And it's just going through your house, sort of. Here's the thing. Like with this iPhone charger, you know, where like it's missing this plastic, the plastic covering over this sort of metallic shiny part at the end. Don't you just assume that anything metallic and shiny that is in any way hooked to a cable can probably kill you?
Oh, yeah. Well, you remember with my my laptop here when my the power cable became frayed and was just arcing. And smoke was coming off of it.
I do remember that, actually.
And I kept going, it's still working. It's fine.
Why did we think it was a good idea to continue to have that in the room?
I don't know. Because I hadn't bothered to get a new one yet.
Did it catch on fire at one point?
It did at home. I used it, and I was actually at home, and a little bit of a little blue flame came off, and it went, and the smoke came off it, and then it stopped working. So fortunately, that never happened here in the office, like where I have it, you know, right next to giant piles of papers and stuff like
that. Yeah,
I do
that would
here.
Be bad.
That would have been really bad.
You know, really, all that would survive would just be the jack-o'-lantern. That would be it. So, well, in any event, Squires Electric can be contacted at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. It has to do with installing, upgrading, repairing, or supervising, or perhaps helping to anticipate the inspection of your wires or your wiring, your electrical system, whether you're going to be building a brand new home, or you're going to be just getting something repaired, or you're going to be remodeling, going to be adding or expanding, augmenting your abode. You can have them out to do everything from the actual installation just to a repair or just an inspection and do the whole thing A to Z if you want as well. It's 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. Apparently, I missed a phone call. I'm just looking at my voicemail, and it just says, let me see this. It actually just says, I missed a call from Portland.
Oh.
And I have a voicemail from Portland
all
as well.
All of Portland is trying to call you?
All of Portland wants to correct us about something.
Well.
All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Be the first time. Google is getting into the science fair business with its first Google Science Fair, a global competition for teenagers that spans sciences as diverse as computer engineering, space exploration, and medical technology. The event does not have the name recognition and deep roots of the science fairs from companies like Intel or Siemens, but for most children, Google is the most familiar company of the three. With the science fair, Google aims to play an even bigger role in their lives by encouraging young scientists to experiment and to use Google products while they do it. Google Science Fair is different from the others in a major way. Entrants submit their projects online using Google products like Gmail, YouTube, and Google Docs and Sites. It's a modern-day version of showing up at the school gymnasium to demonstrate lava-spewing volcanoes, but the goal is for students to be able to enter even if they live too far from a science fair or if their schools lack the resources to travel to the more prestigious science fairs.
Or if they live in a town that doesn't truck much with science.
Or if they're homeschooled and they don't really understand science very well, but they
except that it's evil.
Except
that
it's evil. Monday is the last day. This past Monday was the last day for science-minded teenagers to enter the competition. That would be yesterday. The science fairs of today have not changed much in years, said Tom Oliveri of Google. They're still in gymnasiums with cardboard and glue. So we can use the web to reach a lot more students.
Somebody was actually, I forget who this was, a few months ago was saying that we did over the Rick Emerson show that we should do like a Rick Emerson science fair.
Yeah.
Which, well, see, you say yeah, and it seems like a good idea, but that would just end in like maimings and loss. And it would just be a bunch of penis stuff. You know that it would just be like, you know, everything would just end in like of the penis. You know,
we could do
the pneumatic
though,
properties of the penis.
We could accept entries for that, though, for our listener show that will be coming up in a few months. And they could come up on stage and share their science projects.
By which you mean their penis.
Well, okay. Sure. The depletion of the ozone layer, shielding Earth from damaging ultraviolet rays, has reached an unprecedented low over the Arctic this spring.
Now we can plug it with radiation.
Maybe. We got to be able to do something with all that radiation.
Why can't we do this? Why can't we plug the ozone layer with trash, you know?
Yeah.
Just sort of a closing of the circle, sort of a just, you know, the problem becomes the solution.
Take that spurious trash island they keep telling us about and just shoot it up into space and plug it into the ozone layer.
Make it a garbage barge in space!
Yes. And there could be a space dentist on it. The Earth's fragile ozone layer in the Arctic region has suffered a loss of about 40% from the start of winter until late March, exceeding the previous seasonal loss of about 30%.
Woohoo!
The Geneva-based agency World Meteorological Organization blamed the loss on the buildup of ozone-eating chemicals once widely used as coolants and fire retardants in a variety of appliances.
That's ironic.
And on very cold temperatures in the stratosphere. So, anyway, yeah. Don't really know what to tell you other than...
stay inside.
We're dying.
Stay in your homes.
Archaeologists sifting through the ancient equivalent of an office recycling bin have found a tiny Greek tablet that appears to be a page from a bookkeeper's notepad, according to the New York Times. The 2x3-inch artifact, which shows 3,400-year-old writing from the dawn of the Greek states, could open a new chapter in the history of bureaucracy. The tablet, which the early Greeks never meant to preserve, has the Greek word to prepare to manufacture on one side and a list of men's names next to numbers on the other. An expert said, "The fact that we have a tablet like this means that this government had scribes, and scribes are a product of bureaucracy."
Is this a note from Xerxes to Xanthos saying, you know, like, some belt tightening probably needed in your sector?
Well, yeah, they're saying that it's essentially the equivalent of a post-it note from 3,400 years ago.
My lunch, do not take.
Clean out fridge on Friday. Everything will go. A new vaccine could soon banish allergies to cats. The vaccine isn't ready for release yet.
A vaccine called the gun?
But a new study finds that the shots are safe, researchers reported March 31st. They are also effective at reducing allergic reactions. About 10% of people are allergic to cats. Currently, the only solutions are to stay away from them or to get multiple injections of allergens to help the body build up a tolerance. But that process can take years. An early clinical trial on 88 patients resulted in no serious side effects of this new vaccine. A single injection reduced the skin's inflammatory reaction to cat allergens by 40%. To get an equivalent response with current anti-pollen allergy treatments, patients would have to get 12 weeks of treatment with pollen extract.
And there's no staying away from cats. They'll find you. The cats can, and they can suss out. They know who's allergic.
Oh, they do. They also know who hates them.
Yeah, and you want me.
If there are people who just don't like cats,
yes,
you're the one the cat will go,
oh, yeah,
I'm jumping on you.
No, I walk in and they're just, you know, rubbing all over me and jumping on me and dancing on my head. And it's like they just can't get enough of me. Anytime I go, anybody who has a cat, it's just, you know, they're just, yeah, they just. And it's like, and of course, everything that cats do that we think is adorable is really just them saying, get away, get away, get away, get away. It's like, you know, all of the sort of mannerisms that we believe that, you know, that, oh, he likes me a lot. It's just like the cat wondering if he can fit you into his mouth. That's all of the, all of those things that we find so charming. So,
yeah, he's just rubbing himself all over you to make sure that all the other cats know that you're, you
mine.
Know, yeah.
My lunch, don't take.
Right, exactly.
That's really what he's saying.
Yeah. That's all the science.
There you go. There's your science on the march. Brought to you by Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or Squires Electric. .com and so forth. Still to come this hour, you got your entertainment news in the next hour. The Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Clown Watch, Nazi Watch, Cannibal Watch, and Mr. Aaron Duran with the Week in Geek. Plus, let's see. Oh, I'll get that photo gallery up that I mentioned yesterday, the great horrible place that I was at, and also a terrifying picture or two.
And I watched the first two episodes of The Killing last night.
Should save your thoughts.
So, and we will talk about that. I'm just saying. We'll talk about it next hour.
I was doing a little. That was supposed to be like a corking sort of a sound, but it sounded like me just going.
I was teasing it.
Okay. Just making sure.
For later.
Well, sometimes we lack impulse control.
Yeah.
Here's Don Taylor.
As another federal budget deadline approaches, President Obama is stepping in to try and move the process along and avert a government shutdown. Press Secretary Jay Carney says Mr. Obama hosts a meeting today to try and get a budget passed instead of implementing a series of stopgap measures.
Invitations were extended to Speaker Boehner, Senate Majority Leader Reid, Chairman Dan Inouye, and Chairman Hal Rogers to a meeting tomorrow at the White House with the President to discuss ongoing negotiations on a funding bill to bring us through the end of this fiscal year.
That sounds really exciting.
I dozed off in the middle of that.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I just looked over and there was a photo someone emailed me of a friend's daughter who's now playing the Queen at a Renaissance fair, and I just completely lost track of what he was talking about. Carney says the president will try and work a deal to reach a budget compromise by the end of this week.
Only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about the expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
I thought that might perk you up a little bit.
It's crazy.
Yeah, no. I don't know if I actually made that one part of the permanent sound bank.
Oh, we need her.
No, I'm going to do that right now while we're talking. I'm going to what is the actual sound? Oh, let me find the actual sound bite.
The president has made clear that we all understand the need to cut spending, and significant progress has been made in agreeing that we can all work off the same number, $73 billion in spending cuts in this year alone.
Here's the thing. This has just become one of those things that we have. I remember the first time they shut down the government. I was in high school, I think, or something, and it was the sort of thing of like, the government's closed. Oh, my God, what's going to happen? And really, you know, like nothing happened.
Nothing
I think
changes.
It was like the mail took like a day or two later to get to my house, maybe. But I might even be making that up in retrospect. I don't know. I don't think there was any actual demonstrable effect to me, and I don't think my life was impacted really in any negative fashion. So,
no.
But they've done it like 70 times since then. And so every subsequent time, it inspires less fear in me.
New York Senator Chuck Schumer says both sides agree on a need to cut spending, but the Tea Party is standing in the way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's bad.
Smart way with a sharp scalpel. They want to just use
an iron boot, a pointy stick.
And they're losing ground.
All right. Let's try to get the. I don't even really know what Chuck Schumer was trying to say because I was busy getting. Let's see. Hold on. Wait for it. Let's see if I can get. Because we had the two cuts, right? There was one. There's one that's the GM employee, and then there was. Wasn't there a second cut that was somebody else? It was some other unintelligible woman.
Oh, yeah. The Walmart employee.
That's
yeah.
Right. The Walmart employee. So I'm going to try to dig those up. I'll have those on the soundboard here in just a skosh, Don Taylor.
Well, the fine folks at Slate offer a conundrum for you, Mr. Rick Emerson. Consider this, if you will.
Uh-huh.
Would you grant Snape a plea bargain if it meant bringing down Lord Voldemort?
Are they really positing that, or are they using it as a metaphor for something
They're
else?
They're using it as a metaphor for something
okay,
else.
Okay, all right. What is the who's Snape in this scenario?
Well, in the case of former Libyan Foreign Minister Musa Kusa, the U.S.
Musa Kusa, really?
The U.S. answered yes. The Obama administration unfroze Kusa's assets Monday in the hopes of luring other top Libyan ministers to abandon Muammar Gaddafi's cabinet. The decision to treat Kosa kindly is controversial. It's widely suspected that Gaddafi's right-hand man played a central role in the Lockerbie bombing of Pan Am 103. His in-country exploits, including the ruthless hounding of dissidents, have earned him the epithet Fingernail Puller-in-Chief.
Is that a rough translation, do you suppose, or?
I believe, yes, I'm sure that it's probably
does
much...
Does it sound, does it flow?
It flows a little better.
More in the original
in
Arabic or whatever?
American and British authorities hoping to undermine the Gaddafi regime apparently see clemency as a regrettable but necessary step. Colonel Gaddafi's son and aspiring Libyan leader, Saif al-Islam al-Gaddafi, accused the British of coercing Kosa, said, "The British government said this, you have no immunity unless you cooperate. He is sick. He is sick and old. So if you put it this way, no immunity. Of course I will come out with the funny stories."
Like the fingernail pulling and the whatnot and the hey-hey and the ow, it hurts me.
Yeah, Scottish police are hoping to hear some of those funny stories when they interview Kosa. About
and then the guy who's blown into little pieces everywhere.
Yeah, they're going to interview about the Lockerbie bombing.
A stitch.
It'd be hilarious.
All right.
Yeah. Selectmen in Brookline, New Hampshire, have decided to fire a police sergeant who admitted spending the department's money on personal items. Sergeant Michael Kurland has been on paid leave since December. He admitted that he used money from the department's uniform account to buy a pair of UGG slippers. Kurland said he was reimbursing himself for out-of-pocket expenses for the town's D.A.R.E. program.
Was he also reimbursing himself for the money it cost to build the time machine to go back to 1998 when everybody wanted UGG slippers?
I guess.
Okay.
Selectman Daryl Philpott said, "The process that led us here was riddled with mistakes." Kurland faced a slew of charges leveled against him by the new police chief, William Quigley. Authorities said Kurland paid the department back, but Quigley said Kurland was less than forthcoming when he was initially confronted. They said if he had simply provided that detail, admitted to what he had done right away, we probably wouldn't be here. In hearings, testimony revealed Kurland had a traffic stop confrontation with Chief Quigley's son years ago, leading some to believe Quigley may hold a grudge against him.
It must be embarrassing to realize, you know, to have it sort of out of it. You were like you basically swindling people and embezzling to buy yourself UGG slippers.
Yeah, and then the only reason that you get in trouble about it for it is because you once gave a ticket to the new police chief's kid.
This is when you really you realize that The Wire is not any sort of an exaggeration, that really that every systemic problem you've ever dealt with in your life is just the result of human pettiness and ignorance and incompetence.
Yes.
It is just the tiniest, smallest infraction writ large over many years. You are listening to the very fine Legion of News program here at Cascadia.fm, available later on the day from iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at Legion of News.com. The Rick Emerson Show is next hour at rickemersonshow.com.
Gauguin's painting Two Tahitian Women came under attack on Friday in Washington's National Gallery. Shrieking, "This is evil," a woman lunged at the painting, pummeling it with her fists. Luckily, a clear plastic cover protected the picture from her onslaught. The woman was tackled by a social worker from the Bronx amid screams and shouts, according to an onlooker. A spokeswoman for the museum said the 1899 work appeared to be unharmed, although a closer inspection will be conducted today.
Did she specify the nature of the evil?
It does depict two native women carrying fruit and flowers, and their breasts are bare.
I see.
So maybe the naked breasts.
They're evil, evil breasts.
She found the breastesses to be.
I think the journalistic name is Dirty Pillows.
Right.
Yes.
A Charlotte, North Carolina homeowner says unknown suspects entered his Dinglewood Avenue home on March 29th and stole multiple items.
No man enters my Dinglewood home without my express permission.
According to his report, the owner was home at the time but moved from one room to another. Officers say the suspects are two black males, one of which is known to the police because...
Are officers saying the suspects are two black males, or are they bluffing that the suspects are two black males?
Well, I guess the guy realized they were two black males, but one of the gentlemen had a T-shirt with his own face on it that fell out of his car as he fled the scene.
You're sure that he wasn't robbed by David Lee Roth? Bullety bows, give me your silver.
But that he's not a black male, though.
Well, not outside.
No. Oh, that's true. What's this thing? Oh, here we go. I'm looking for the story I was going to read. It's awesome. Okay. Here we are. That's not it.
Wow. That really was awesome.
Thank you.
Okay. Is that it? You can't find the story, can you? You don't know where it is.
No.
It's gone.
I didn't have no inside information about the pay structure because that's all confidential. But I could visually see that the men in my store was advancing much more often than the women.
So that's the sound, but that's the second sound bite.
Yes.
And there's the, wait, here we go.
It's crazy. Because, first of all, why would you buy?
Okay, can I just say, how much does this woman sound like the, you know, they're snatching all your peoples up? That guy,
oh,
the
yeah.
auto-tune guy.
Oh, yeah.
The, yeah, they're raping everybody up here.
It's crazy. Because, first of all, why would you buy parts from in Japan when you're supposed to keep it in the United States anyway? That's how, I mean, so common sense. I hope they're up there saying, a duh.
That's fantastic. That's
I love
wonderful.
When she says duh.
I can't figure out whether it's like a lot of teeth, too many teeth, no teeth at all. There's something toothless and phlegmy going on in that mouth.
Speaking of toothless and phlegmy, let's do entertainment news.
I'm toothless, she's phlegmy, we're toothless and phlegmy. Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday.
Kirstie Alley and her Dancing with the Stars partner, Maxim Smirkovsky, have taken a tumble in the ballroom during a live performance of the show. Just seconds into their rumba routine to Somewhere Over the Rainbow on Monday, Smirkovsky fell to the floor, taking the 60-year-old actress down with him.
Well, I'm just picturing like a whole Godzilla versus Bambi kind of a thing.
A limping, apologetic Smirkovsky told the judges that his thigh just gave out.
Uh-huh.
After a few moments, the pair recovered and went on to earn the praise of the judges and a score of 21, 1 point higher than their score from last week's Quick Step. And I'm assuming they didn't fall down.
I wonder if that's just a whole... I mean, I wonder if the engineers backstage who are in charge of reinforcing the flooring, if they just sort of, you know, it's giving way!
Kirstie Alley is not fat anymore.
Not today.
She's not fat right now.
She's fat. Here's the thing. She may not look fat from where you're sitting, in front of the television. I'm telling you right there, you get up close to her, you lift up whatever she's wearing, there's some serious, like, Grand Coulee-style reinforcement happening underneath that outfit.
Yeah.
The cream of our architectural design and structural engineering thought is going into designing Kirstie Alley's undergarments.
I mean, she is a little on the heavier side, you know, but she's not fat like she was. The thing that really angers me about Kirstie Alley is when she went on that damn Jenny Craig diet and started talking about stuff, and you saw these pictures of her when she was at her highest weight, and she's saying, oh, I was all the way up to 203 pounds, or I was up to 190 here, and you're going, oh, you are full of crap.
Yeah, that ain't no 200
pounds. You're 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
There is no... She was 300 pounds, if anything.
No,
and
there's...
To be just saying, I'm fat and I'm going on a diet... And then lying about how fat you were.
The thing about Kirstie Alley, I've said for the longest time that there is some sort of a... It's not unlike... there was that old thing in the Western movies where they would say there was that phrase, cut to the owl. And the owl was... that was a phrase that came out of early Western films, like spaghetti Westerns, you know, that were just made on the cheap, where if they didn't have film and they needed to make an edit, they needed to jump from the inside action to the outside action, but there was no interstitial film, they would just have a picture of an owl sitting in a window somewhere, and they would just cut to that. Or like a film clip of just, you know, like a guy sitting on a horse staring at the horizon.
Or a coyote howling.
Right, yeah. It's like anytime in Clerks, if you watch the original Clerks, anytime you see the cat sitting in the litter box, it's because Smith needed to make some sort of a transition and had no footage there, and so they would just cut to the cat pooping in the litter box. Kirstie Alley is like the owl or the cat in the litter box for the Inquirer. Anytime that they just get to the publishing deadline and there is no art for the front, they just put on a picture of Kirstie Alley just going, blackatata bluta solo on the front. Because, I mean, literally, it does seem from like one day to the next, she's like smaller, and then she's huge again, and then she's smaller, and then she's huge again. Often from hour to hour, it seems to fluctuate. Just, it seems like she puts on weight and loses it again faster than would be physically possible for like, a human or any carbon-based life form.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works. So that's why I'm saying there's trussing going on underneath
there. The problem is, of course, we don't actually see her on a day-to-day basis. Plus, magazines just grab, like, the ugliest, worst photos they can a lot of times. So you see a photo of her and you go, oh, she's still fat. And then you see her in Dancing with the Stars and you go, oh, apparently she's not still fat. But I just saw a picture of her like 2 weeks ago and she was fat. Well, you know, it's not necessarily a current photo.
You have to really admire the National Enquirer, though, for just the ability to get you at exactly the wrong moment. Because what they'll do is they'll catch you when you're like sneezing and they'll be, you know, and John Travolta, you know, drunk and stumbling. And it's him going like, ah! You know, and he's halfway through a sneeze. And of course, it looks like he's just having some sort of epileptic fit, like some palsy or something. There was like this 2-3 week period in a row where they just got Kirstie Alley. And you would think she has money, she has people. Why do you need to leave the house, much less go to a restaurant, much less be in a restaurant with huge windows, much less be inside the huge windowed restaurant shoveling food of whatever kind into your mouth? That's going to look bad.
Yeah.
It's not going to look good.
No.
So, yeah, it was just, she just looked like, she looked like a disposal. I mean, it was unfortunate. Mm. But you think that she would know better at this point. But, you know.
Yeah. TMZ reports that former Rock of Love star, and I think you could use the word star, ironically.
There's no need to be snotty.
Megan Hauserman.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Bret Michaels.
Oh, no. Bret Michaels actually was the star of Rock and Love.
Megan Hauserman.
Yeah.
And they actually say star.
Yeah.
Did she win the first?
I don't know.
All right.
She struck a plea deal with prosecutors as she pleaded guilty to one count of DUI. She was arrested last year and sentenced to 6 months probation, slapped with a $1,000 fine, and had her driver's license suspended for 6 months.
You just became all East Coast there. Her driver's license.
Her driver's license.
Got suspended. She's got to get with the walking.
Singer Michael Bublé's Buenos Aires house was burglarized while he was getting married on Saturday. El Universal claims the crooks cut off the alarm system and covered the security cameras before taking money and objects from the house. In a Twitter post, his new wife said the thieves did not take anything of huge value from the residence. I guess that's a great way to know, you know, when you can break into a famous guy's house. Is when it's like all over the news that he's going to be someplace else getting married.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, guess nobody will be home.
The Bublé residence is...
Thank you, People magazine.
Unguarded. Especially a guy like that who, you know, is making a fair amount of money, but probably is not, you know, he's not ensconced in some palatial mansion that is removed from, you know, that's probably a place that's accessible, it would seem to me.
The crowd was much more welcoming in Chicago than the one in Detroit for Charlie Sheen's road show.
Uh-huh.
He totally revamped it after bombing in Detroit, but this fan was still disappointed.
Sheen one. Hold on a second. Now this GM cut is like is a curse. Every time I load this GM soundbite of the woman going duh. It freezes like everything. She's got some sort of unholy, like, you know, Indian burial ground type ability. I don't know, let's see, Sheen won here.
If I could get my time back, I would certainly want to do that. That was probably the most random collection of thoughts I've ever seen.
And if you're unaware of what happened with Charlie Sheen's show, his first show in Detroit, which people paid $85 a ticket to go see, was basically him just rambling and just talking about crap and showing film clips from movies that he wasn't even necessarily in, and then holding up like one of his shirts from Two and a Half Men and setting it on fire, and then talking about crap that nobody wanted to hear about, and people were booing and walking out. And apparently the Chicago show was a little bit less horrible. But still, this fan, for example, actually liked the show.
I thought it was really funny.
Did you? But now
I did. I was laughing the entire time. It was interesting.
She sounds really smart, too, so you can probably take her word for that.
These fans, however, were hoping for better.
I know he can say he's doing real well, but I didn't see him smile or laugh one time during the whole show.
I don't think
he's got a lot to adjust, so.
But we're behind you, Charlie. Rock on, man. We love you. Come back again, please.
Yeah, okay.
God damn, people are stupid. What? I don't even know what to say about that. But the first guy, like, the first half of this has no relation to the second half. And presumably these guys are there together. And the first guy's like, I don't know, it sucks. He's got to change everything. He's got to fix it. And the second guy's like, but we're behind you, champ, chief. Come on back anytime. What is it that they were expecting, I guess, would be my question. Like, what is it, if you'd asked them beforehand, like, I wish we could have gotten the... Why didn't they do pre-interviews with these people and say, what do you think is going to happen tonight? And what do you hope to happen? You know, if you could just design this show from the ground up yourself, what are you hoping to see on stage?
Yeah, I can't for the life of me figure out what people were buying a ticket for and then how they could possibly be disappointed, because essentially what you're getting is what you've been getting for the last few weeks, just he's there.
Yeah, I mean, he's just sort of doing the same thing in person. And the thing about Charlie Sheen is, I mean, I know that we're all piling on poor Charlie Sheen these days, but here's the thing about Charlie Sheen is really, if you look at the sheer tonnage of material. Like, if you look at all the radio interviews he's done, the insane Twitter feed that he had, the thing he did on 2020, which was still, I think, like the best thing I've ever seen on television, like ever, ever, ever. It's the best thing I've ever seen broadcast on my television. When you think about it, he's given us a lot already. I mean, it's like when you think about the amount of material that Charlie Sheen has generated over the last 6 weeks and how much of it has been awesome to one degree or another. Really, at this point, I wouldn't blame him if he just... I mean, he's already given us his Pet Sounds and his Sgt. Pepper in the course of, like, a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, what does he have to do? How much do you people want? He's already given. I mean, leave the man alone. He's not Jesus. Just keep feeding off of Charlie Sheen over and over and over again.
Will Smith and his son Jaden Smith will star in the next film for director M. Night Shyamalan. The Adventure...
With all my favorite things in one place.
The Adventure is set 1,000 years into the future... centers on a boy who travels through Earth to save himself and his estranged father after their ship crashes. I'm not sure that sentence
How does
means
he
what they think.
Travel through Earth if
I
his ship has crashed.
I don't know. In a statement, Shyamalan said that the chance to make a scary science fiction film starring Jaden and Will is my dream project.
That's a lie. That's what that is right there. That's just a that's a falsehood.
I believe you're right.
He's making
he's
that
lying.
Up. But it's not so much that he's making that up, because you would expect him to do it because he's M. Night Shyamalan. But I mean, it's the my question is, like, what is Will Smith thinking there? Is that a thing where it's like his kid really liked The Happening or something, or just his kid was a big fan of The Village, and so by God, we're you know, Lady in the Water was you know it was our movie, and so the chance to work with him. That's what I was like. What is Will Smith's deal there?
I don't know, because I'm wondering if this is one of those things where Will Smith and Shyamalan were put together by like agents and studio people, because Smith, I would imagine Will Smith gets to call the shots on pretty much anything he does.
Oh, yeah.
So he's not going to be at Shyamalan's mercy as far as the script or the direction or even the final product that this movie comes out. So I'm wondering if perhaps Shyamalan and Will Smith were put together by somebody who wants there to be more Shyamalan movies but wants him to stop making them be horrible.
Right.
And so it's like, you're going to work with Will Smith, and guess what? What Will says goes.
Although, let's be honest, it's not like Will Smith's total control over a picture is going to be any degree, you know. That's no barometer for judging the film's success.
But the thing is, though, that I will say this, that he makes mainstream popcorn movies, but he makes really solid, well-crafted ones. Will Smith has made very few movies that are outright bad. I, as much as I disliked The Pursuit of Happiness, for example, I mean, that was a personal thing. I just really disliked it. But for what it was actually very well made.
I don't dislike Will Smith or his films, and I think he's got an astounding batting average. I mean,
yeah,
if you look at his hit to miss ratio, is probably is as good, if not better than nearly anyone else you can think of in Hollywood. When I say that Will Smith's control over a picture is not a barometer of how well that film is going to do, I guess I'm thinking of the fact that, it's not like he hasn't strayed outside this. He has from time to time. He's stretched a little bit. But the thing about Will Smith is, for the longest time and so frequently, he just seems locked into that one, like, bulletproof persona of his.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Tom Cruise, you know, kind of fell into that for a while, too. And if he's either engaged and motivated enough to stretch a little bit, or if he has a director that can kind of push him and challenge him a little, then I think it's good. Otherwise, when Will Smith lapses back into doing sort of the same, you know, like the same wisecracking, you know, unshakable, you know, whatever, you know, kind of persona that he's done for so long in his films, I think that's when those movies begin to they wear for me a little bit. When he's just being the Welcome to Earth guy over and over and over again.
Finally, we have a little casting news of The Hunger Games. I'm not sure who this girl is that was cast in the lead. Her name's Jennifer Lawrence.
You got something
Lawrence.
In your eye?
I do. I have
You're
something
doing
in my
a,
eye. I'm
a
sorry.
Thing over there.
But Josh Hutcherson and Liam Hemsworth have been cast as the two male leads in The Hunger Games. So we have, for those of us, and I'm a big fan of the series. I've read all three of the books, and they're huge.
This is the thing you were talking to Walker about? Is that the deal?
No, that was something entirely different. But yeah, the PETA and Gale, the two male leads for The Hunger Games, have been cast. And Josh Hutcherson was in The Kids Are All Right most recently. And I'm not sure who Liam Hemsworth is. They say he was in a movie called The Last Song, and I don't know what that is. But the film is going to be directed by Gary Ross, who last directed Seabiscuit, of all things. And the Movie is set to be released in March of next year.
Excellent. All right, there you go. And this GM woman, damn her! All right. Let's see if this... Wait. No. Don, you may have to hum the Legion of News theme here as we get to the... All right, there we go. This has been another exciting... You can stop humming now. Another exciting installment of... Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good and righteous things. At the news desk, it's Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can get this program later in the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at Legion of News. Come on, you wanted to bring it. .com. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. As always, thank you for listening. Have a great day, won't you?
The Rick Emerson Show begins shortly. Keep listening. This is the Emerson News Network.